When Blockbuster announced late last year that they'd be closing the rest of their retail stores, the news was met with a range of emotions. Some people were nostalgic. Some celebrated the fact they didn't have to pay their late fees. Most of all, there's some ambivalence. You could almost hear people saying, Blockbuster was still around?
The story of Blockbuster is pretty representative of the video store business in general. These days, stores are closing and people are going online for their movies. But our next guest thinks video stores are worth a closer look. He says these stores aren't just places to pick up movies and maybe a bag of popcorn. They actually changed the way we interacted with movies, which in turn changed American movie culture forever.
Joining us now is Daniel Herbert. He's assistant professor of screen arts and cultures at the University of Michigan. His new book is Videoland, Movie Culture at the American Video Store. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm sure all of us have noticed over the years the rise and then fall of the video store, but you're saying the video store was pivotal in changing our movie culture in this country. How so?
Well, I think, excuse me, I've got a cold today.
It's going around.
Well, primarily, you know, one of the first things it did was disperse movie culture at a kind of local level. So, you know, in 1977, the first Hollywood movies were put on VHS tape. And very rapidly, small entrepreneurs from a wide variety of backgrounds opened up little rental shops all over the place. And, you know, whereas before the movie theater had been the kind of center of movie culture, suddenly, you know, movie culture was around the corner next to the pizza shops, next to the dry cleaners, next to the 7-Elevens. And so it made it much more accessible in terms of a geographic way. The second part, I think, it has to do with the amount of options that the video store provided, right? So that it wasn't just what was playing on television that night or what was playing at the theater that week, but suddenly you had 200, 300, 2,000 movie options, just around the corner from your house.
Did it kind of democratize film culture? Because in the past, you had to be either in a big city or maybe a college town with a couple good art theaters, and all of a sudden you had access to a lot of stuff that never would have come to your local theater?
That's absolutely true. I think it democratized it in two ways. First, that the people starting these businesses weren't officially part of the movie business, right? So they weren't of Hollywood. These were just everyday folks who were dentists or plumbers, and so suddenly these people, general Americans, were part of Hollywood or the movie business. And then, of course, it did democratize movie consumption, as you say, right? So that, you know, wherever you lived, it might not be the best selection in the world, but you had a variety of movie options that you might not have had otherwise. And certainly, you know, in smaller towns, a variety of movies that weren't ever going to come to your local theater. Sometimes arty films, sometimes lowbrow horror films, but stuff that, you know, you didn't have access to otherwise.
Pre-video rental, the only way to see a movie for the most part, with some home options as exceptions, was to go out to the theater on your own with friends or family. Now there is a new way to make movies a social event. How did that change the meaning of movies for us?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it in part had to do with the way first you interacted with the clerks, right? These clerks knew the store, knew the stock, knew the movies. And so suddenly you're taking part in a kind of public discussion about what you want to rent, what's good, what have you seen last week. And that discussion isn't just between customers and clerks, but it was happening between customers as well and happening among families as they went out into the store. And you had to figure out what mom wanted and what dad wanted and what the kids wanted. And so there was a kind of new way of bringing a general discussion about taste and movie taste into a public retail space, which it wasn't like these places tried to become community centers or cultural centers in any way, but they ended up being de facto little cultural landmarks as a result, right? So that we all have these associations with the video store meaning something to us, not just individually in terms of what we rented, but because of the way we participated in our public lives around movies and with each other.
Yeah, I feel like unlike a lot of other retail-type stores where, you know, you could go into one store or another store, no big deal, it really was an engaging experience. It was a special thing to go to some, especially of the local video stores.
Totally. And I think, you know, the analogies are, you know, would be like the very good bookstore, or for people who are into music, the very good record store, or for people who are into comics, the comic store, right? So that these kinds of places of not cultural consumption, but shopping for leisure items, cultural goods in retail spaces produced this kind of emotional and cultural sense of value for a lot of people. And the video store was the way that this happened around movie culture, which was new. I think that, you know, movie theaters didn't generate the same kind of public discussion, public engagement with fellow Americans around movies. You just kind of went to the theater and saw your movie and went home, and then you talked about it at work or at school, but you didn't really participate on the site the same way.
Did it lead us to just consume more movies on an hour-per-hour basis?
That's absolutely true. that the access that they provided wasn't just the number of movies or the variety of movies, but because you could rent it and watch it whenever you chose, movie culture became much more controllable to the lived schedules of everybody's life, right? And everybody has different work schedules, different family obligations, and so because it made movie viewing very flexible, suddenly movie viewing went up. And by I think 1986 or 87, home video was making more money than movie theaters. So it quickly became the primary site of movie culture, at least economically, right? And by the 1990s, more people were renting movies than were going to sporting events or rock concerts or many other kinds of cultural events.
That's a big revolution in the way we entertain ourselves.
Totally. I think it is about making the movie, getting it onto either a tape or onto a plastic disc in the form of DVD makes this thing a commodity, an objective material commodity that then can circulate in this really new way, right? So the film print and celluloid is like, you know, is controlled by the movie studios or by the movie theaters. But making these movies portable and small and able to be circulated through culture in this way makes gives a lot. I guess access is the term, right? Like gave a lot of new forms of access.
Well, and it makes the movies permanent in a way. In the old days, if you saw a movie at a theater, your options were to go back and see it again the next day or wait till its run is over and probably never see it again.
That's right.
Now, if we like a movie, we can keep going back and renting it or maybe even buy it and watch it and analyze it and again and again.
That's right. And that's a good point in terms of like the way it also created a new sense of like film history for people, right? Because the movies didn't just come in and out of theaters or play on television that night and disappear. Movie history was kind of there, visible to anybody who went to the video store. Like obviously it's not the entirety of film history, and every video store had a limited selection to a degree, but it gave the sense that these objects being permanent gave a depth of historical access. I lost my train of thought.
That's all right. We can dig a little deeper into some of those issues, but I want to fast forward, as I might have on a VCR back in the old days. To the present, we've got things like Netflix, Amazon, various forms of online distribution, effectively wiping out most video stores. An interesting irony you pointed out in your book: video stores changed the way we think about movies, and that, in a way, paved the way for those online services.
Absolutely. I think because, you know, the video store made movies shoppable, right? They provided a sense that we as individuals could find what we wanted out of this huge selection, right? And that we could match our tastes with the selection available at the store. And if you think about the way movie culture has progressed since the 1980s and 1990s, it has been of increasing personalization. And Netflix provides that even in the form of algorithms that tell you what you might like. So that in some ways, the idea that movies are abundant and that we can all find what we want, video stores did that, and then Netflix just kind of extends that logic, amplifies it, and puts it into your home so that you actually don't have to go out into public to shop for movies. You can shop and consume from your couch or wherever you have your iPad, really.
Video stores introduced me to a concept, I didn't know a name for it then, the paradox of choice, where I could stand in a video store and walk around the aisles and browse and just not be able to lock in on anything in a store. Were you ever in that situation, Daniel?
All the time. I mean, that's a huge pleasure. I actually personally loved video stores, and I loved the act of browsing. Even after I worked at a video store in the late 1990s and in the 2000s. But when I was in graduate school at USC during the 2000s, I would regularly walk down the street and just browse at the video store as a way of, like, cleaning my head of all the work I was doing. And so, yeah, it was actually pleasurable for me just to see what was there and to walk around and contemplate. And I think that is actually maybe not just for me personally, but one of the kind of bigger losses of the video store is the ability to not just mentally browse or speculate about what we want to watch, but the fact that we did that in real material space is something I miss. I liked walking around, and I liked looking at the tapes and the discs and thinking about what they might be like. Certainly there were times where you walk out of the video store empty-handed, and that's frustrating. But I think that act of browsing provided its own kind of pleasure. That sometimes that could stand in for the movie. Maybe it was sometimes better than any movie you could have brought home.
We're talking with Daniel Herbert, author of Videoland, about video stores and how they change movie culture. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How did the video store change your movie experience? If you still go to one, what is it that keeps you coming back? Do you have a favorite store, past or present? Do you miss video stores in your community? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on our Central Time Facebook page. We're talking with Daniel Herbert, author of Videoland, about how video rental stores helped change American movie culture and the way we talk about films.
And we want to hear from you on this. Are you nostalgic about the days of the video store? Do you miss going in there with your family, wandering the aisles for an hour, emerging several hours later with a movie? What was that experience like? Or do you like the convenience that we have at our fingertips now with services like Netflix? Let us know your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Samuel on the line in Hebron, Illinois. Samuel, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your video store story?
Well, I was just going to say, just talking about browsing for movies in a material space rather than cyberspace, I thought was way more, entertaining and valuable. Because with Netflix, I feel like there's too many choices, or even the internet in general,
Yeah, it's almost too easy, too, it feels like sometimes.
It is. Yeah, I want to earn my movie almost by looking for it and picking it up,
Samuel, thanks a lot for bringing that up. Daniel, we need to earn our movies. We need to go out and hunt and gather them.
That's right. I think that there's a whole, there is a certain strain of video store culture that prioritizes the hunt, right? The search for that, the special thing. And certainly I think with the video stores disappearing, we're more and more aware of that loss, that those of us who love that kind of sense of the joy of, some people call it hunting, other people could just call it shopping, right? Of finding that special thing that makes you happy. But in material space, as the caller says, we've lost something. And with Netflix, I think, for me personally, I can spend as much time surfing Netflix as I used to spend in the video store and still walk away empty-handed. What you don't have, though, with Netflix is the sense that was pleasurable, right? Like, I used to be able to walk out of the video store without anything and think, I had a good time. Whereas when I look at the Netflix queue for an hour, I think, God, well, I've just wasted an hour.
Samuel, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Daniel, if we're not having these interactions, these discussions about movies at our video store, are they still going on? Are they moving online, do you think?
I do think that there's a lot of venues for that discussion in online chat forums, And even when you think about like things like IMDb or other websites that kind of allow users or internet surfers to add comments about movies, right? And things like I'm not thinking of it, but like websites that allow for people, or blogs, right? Mm-hmm. Like the kind of explosion of movie critical blogs and people like putting up their own movie reviews, DVD reviews. So there is in some ways a new resurgence of discourse, film discourse or discussion online that's actually quite, can be quite intelligent and really sophisticated. And I don't know that I want to make a strong link to the loss of video stores and this growth of online discussion, but it does seem like they go hand in hand.
Did video stores make us, in some ways, a nation of film buffs?
In some ways, right? Like, I think, like, because in my book, one of the chapters is about small-town video stores, places which, you know, we don't think of as having, like, quote-unquote high culture, like, high taste, but these places, these small-town video stores, were the movie business for these small towns, right? And so even in places without, like, access to an art house theater, these video stores were really important to creating a sense that movies were valuable, that movies were worth talking about, and that everybody could find their own little niche or their own little taste and get that satisfied at the video store.
And this is not all past tense. You point toward a success story or two. I think it's a Family Video, the chain?
Yeah, they're the kind of amazing industry outlier that they're actually not just succeeding, but they're expanding. And I think they're, at this point they're the largest video chain in the country, largely located in the Midwest, because that's where they started. And they're just... they're doing an amazing thing of expanding video stores. They offer really low rental rates. They give, I think, last I checked anyway, they had free kids rentals. And so they're competing for, you know, in terms of offering very cheap rentals. But their real trick is that they're in the real estate business. So they actually buy up the strip malls where they put in video stores, and then they also lease out other retail locations that are next to the video stores. So it's an interesting business model where they're actually in real estate, and then but they do video rental in that real estate.
Huh. Let's go back to our callers. We've got Jess on the line in Milwaukee. Jess, hi.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good.
One of the things I miss, I have a collection at home of DVDs and movies. I used to buy... but I would also have, you know, develop relationships with the people there at your favorite store and, you know, just talk about the different movies or documentaries or whatever it was and exchange information. And it was nice relationship building. Nowadays, you just don't have that. And so when you don't have that exchange, you don't have the dialogue, and you miss out. So I miss out anyway.
Jess, thanks a lot for sharing that, losing that personal connection we can have over our movie rentals, Daniel.
That's right. And, you know, it's interesting because we wouldn't think of, at least at the time, nobody ever really thought of the video clerk as being an important person in our lives, right? Because we interact with them maybe 5 minutes. But we do that every 2 weeks, or we do that every week, and we do that over the course of 5 years. And suddenly that time accumulates, right? And we realize we've spent 5 years interacting with the same person, and we, in retrospect, they did become important, even if we weren't aware of it at the time. And vice versa. Speaking as a former clerk, I miss a lot of the people that I used to serve. I was just thinking about this, like, from the opposite perspective, is like, God, all these people I used to know in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I have no idea where they are, but I spent a huge chunk of my life talking with them. It's just an interesting shift. And I think the caller's right, that even if we do find a way of having a discussion about film online or in chat forums, I don't think it lends itself to the same intimacy, or at least perceived intimacy, that we had at the video store, because we were face-to-face, right? We breathed the same air. We could hear the person's voice, and we could see their expressions. And that's a loss, I think.
Jess, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Maureen in Waukesha. Maureen, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Oh, I love this topic. I'm in my 50s, and I'm an enormous movie buff. And I just wanted to say, this is not a plug for Netflix, but I used Netflix. I've had Netflix for the last 10 years. I don't just use Instant. I rent from them. And the information they have is amazing. You can cross-reference by actor, you know, look up different movies. And I used to have to do that in book form. And now there's just so much information. And I know for some people it's overwhelming, but I do walk away satisfied when I order DVDs.
All right.
So
thanks.
I just wanted to add that.
Thanks for the call, Maureen. So someone happy with the new way of getting movies, and a lot of people are.
Yeah. No, certainly. I mean, I think I recognized at a certain point that I was getting things on demand more often than going to the video store. And I realized that if I was doing that, then everybody was doing that because I love the video store. And in terms of what the caller says about kind of information, that's a really good point because with the internet, it's not just that with Netflix streaming or on demand providing movies through the internet, but with the rise of IMDb in the 1990s and millennium, suddenly all of that kind of metadata, all of that information about movies was at hand. And so all of that trivia or all of those ways of kind of figuring out what movies an actor had been in or what movies a director had made, all of that was searchable on the computer. And that was a big shift too, right? You didn't have to ask the clerk. You didn't have to buy a big, thick movie guide to figure that stuff out. So it wasn't just the digitalization, I guess, of video isn't just about the movies, but also about all the information around movies. And that really did change, too.
The metadata, as the NSA would call it. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. This has been a lot of fun.
That's Daniel Herbert. He's assistant professor of screen arts and cultures at the University of Michigan. His new book is Videoland, Movie Culture at the American Video Store.